It takes a lot of ingredients to fix or build a car, like cooking, but without the frozen dinner easy way out. eBay Motors has 122 million parts. It's always the right fitment, so you can follow any recipe to a T. Whether it's a vintage Italian coupe that's classic like grandma's meatballs or a German luxury car that's as complicated as Oma's roulade, to cook up something great in the garage, use the eBay Motors app or visit ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
Holidays are here, and so is fashionable fitness. Gift yourself a Samsung Galaxy Z Flip 3 5G, a phone that folds in half to literally stand on its own. Pair it with the Galaxy Watch 4 for ultimate wellness and wow factor. Check health stats, flex personal records. Over 90 activities can be tracked, like biking, swimming, golfing, and more. Invest in yourself with tech made to crush goals. Holidays open up with Galaxy. Shop it all at Samsung.com. 5G connection and availability may vary. Check with carrier. Products sold separately.
Hey everyone, this is the Almost Rogue Podcast. Bringing to you mind-blowing interviews with guests from all over the world. So settle down, relax, and enjoy the show. Oh yeah, by the way, if you like the podcast, please support Almost Rogue Podcast on Patreon. Your support is what helps the podcast improve more and more.
That is what I am. I run a YouTube channel named T-Jump, youtube.com/T-Jump. I debate professors and philosophers on different topics. I'm an atheist. That's cool. All. That's me. Cool.
Yeah, so my first question would be... When in your own personal worldview, does atheism entail nihilism, or do you have to produce some sort of existential meaning in your life, or rather would it be somewhat, an intuition kind of existentialism where you just accept your reality right now? So this is my reality. I'm gonna live it. You know.
No, it does not entail nihilism. I believe there is objective meaning, purpose, value, morality, all those things. Most philosophers do. You don't need a God for any of that. There's lots of different ideologies that can produce those things.
Okay. But do you believe in one specific ideology that works for you? Because, does it like come from different philosophical approaches?
I have my own ideology. I wrote a model of morality and epistemology, and I use those as my basis of meaning and purpose and everything else.
Okay, that's awesome. Can you talk more about that? And I would love to understand especially the ontology of it. That would be really great.
All right, so morality is an emergent, higher order emergent property, kind of like fitness. So animals that can survive in more environments or have a greater level of fitness than animals that can't. That's an objective feature of the world. It's not up to opinion. It's something that exists. And what it measures is the relationship between the animals and the environment. Morality is a lot like that. It's a measurement of interactions between different agents in an environment, just like fitness is a measure of the ability for the organism to survive in an environment. So morality is essentially an emergent property like that, and that's how it can be objective without it being grounded in a God. It's just not really too hard to get that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but I still find it hard to think about how this measurement works. What is its nature? Is it some sort of and when you say it's emergent, is it some sort of like conscious, a mesh compass in our brains? Where does it lie? Where is it inherent?
So do you know what fitness is in biology?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like fitness. Fitness is just a description of how certain animals can survive in the environment. Morality is the same thing. It's just a description of how agents interact with one another. That's what it is. It's not grounded in anything. It's just an emergent property of interactions.
Mm-hmm. So in a way, it will include the harm principle there, that whatever is harmful to me, that's bad. And whatever is not harmful to me or others, that's good. Is that it?
It's about involuntary imposition of will. Fitness is about harm. That's just an analogy. So it isn't about harm. It's about consent or agency, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. When you talk about voluntary consent, so that does it mean that everything should lie on me having enthusiastic voluntary consent, especially, for example, if I decide to go into a vat and that vat contains all happiness hormones injected to my brain every time. It produces a sort of matrix of paradise for me, and then because I didn't go into that vat voluntarily, that vat would be wrong or like immoral. Is that how it works?
Sort of. So yeah, if you force someone to go to a vat that would make them feel chemical happiness no matter what without their consent, yes, that would be immoral. The idea would be is that every person should be no involuntary position of will, so it should be impossible for any person to force any other person to do anything they don't agree to. That would be the basic premise of the morality, the definition of what morality should be or whatever.
But I think there's a problem there though, because for example, if I were someone in the vat and I didn't know that I was put in a vat, how would I know? Because it seems that its nature is purely subjective, in my opinion. So if I never knew that I was put in a vat, how would I know that it was wrong for me to be put in this vat?
Yeah, it's right or wrong independent of whether or not you know it. So it doesn't matter if you know it. Like, you could kill someone in their sleep and they wouldn't know it. It would still be wrong, even if they never knew it.
How? I still can't get into the on why it's wrong. Because, for example, if I myself am the measurement of if something is good or bad because of my voluntary consent and the harm, or not the harm principle, but more of fitness, I guess. Because if I am the gauge of what is moral, then it would be that it's dependent on my own knowledge of what is happening to me. You know, I could say that if I knew that I was put in the vat, then that would be wrong. But if I didn't know anything about, if I didn't know that someone was, for example, bullying me in the internet, then I wouldn't know if it was wrong or right.
No, it's not dependent on knowing. Things can be immoral regardless of whether or not you know them. You're confusing epistemology with ontology. Epistemology is what we know, and ontology is what is the case. So it's like the sun exists whether or not we know it exists or not. Morality exists whether we know it exists or not. So things are moral or immoral, independent of whether or not we know they are or not. It's not, morality isn't right or wrong because we know it. We know it is just a recognition of the fact it's right or wrong. So things aren't right or wrong because we know them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, now that you mentioned epistemology, I would like to ask then, how does your knowledge of this objective morality from your perspective come from? Is it some sort of rationalistic argument or from more of an empirical understanding of the world?
It's definitely empirical. So we have an experience of moral intuition and moral progress. And we're trying to explain what are those things. That's what morality is. We have this moral intuition and moral progress. We want to know what is the cause of that. Maybe it's a God. Maybe it's an emergent property. Maybe it's some kind of abstract object. Who knows? And so we come up with hypotheses to explain these phenomena, and then we use those hypotheses to make predictions. And then if the predictions are confirmed, that's good evidence of your hypothesis. So my hypothesis is that it's a higher order emergent property. I make predictions about what the intuition will be in the future. And if those are correct, that's good evidence that my hypothesis is correct.
Mm-hmm. Cool. But then I guess then if it's empirical, right? So what if I never arrived at this empirical understanding of this principle? Would it then be, moral or start to become immoral in that case? Because I guess then that because, for example, if there are no conscious beings to know whether something is good or bad, then it wouldn't be the case, right? So in the sense that in a world where there is no consciousness, this objective morality would not exist. That's how I look at it.
That's wrong again. So things exist independent of whether or not you know they exist. You don't need to know they exist for them to exist. The sun can exist if there's no brains. Morality can exist if there's no brains. Gravity can exist if there's no brains. The fact that it doesn't affect anything doesn't make it not exist. So, for example, if there was no objects with mass, gravity would still exist. We'd just never see it because it wouldn't be affecting anything. It would still be there. Same with morality. It's just a description of how agents interact with one another in an environment. If there are no agents, well, the law is still there. It's still an emergent property. You don't need agents to actually be there for things to exist.
Well, okay, so I'm still confused on how it exists, though. For example, when there's a law, right? A law would be just paper. A law would be just a social agreement, which is socially constructed. But it wouldn't necessarily...
So I'm talking about natural laws, so like the law of gravity kind of a thing, not written laws.
Okay. Well, I guess then that is it some sort of dualistic nature, or is it exists?
No, it's just like a law of nature, just like gravity.
Okay. Well, I would very much like to understand. For example, let's imagine a world where 2 billion years ago the Earth had no life in it. Would this objective morality that you believe in still exist, or it have been pre-existing since the singularity of the Big Bang?
Yep, just like gravity existed before there were any atoms, it was already there.
But okay, so and I guess then that how does it start? There would be no use for this objective morality at that time because there would be no beings to be to hold or have moral or immoral actions. Right.
Yeah, just like at the beginning of the Big Bang, there were only photons, and so nothing was affected by gravity. So gravity didn't have any use at that point, but it still existed. So whether or not it has any use doesn't make a difference to whether or not it exists.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, okay, I want to talk about, for example, how it is applied in a normal everyday life. Okay. For example, if I were to let's apply it to the trolley problem. I guess that would be very easy to do. Okay, so if I chose, for example, to save the five and sacrifice one, how would I know if something I did is wrong or right?
You look at the models, you say we have moral intuition and moral progress, you plot them out and say, well, what is the pattern that describes what these are doing? And So if we look at the pattern, we say any involuntary position will is bad, and we imagine the extreme of that, which would be the best of all possible worlds. And so you can take any moral situation like the trolley problem, imagine you're in the best of all possible worlds, and then say, well, what would be the ideal thing you could do there? So essentially you imagine you have infinite power, and then what would be the best thing you could do in the situation? It would be, so in the trolley problem where you have a train barreling down the tracks, it's going to hit five people and there's a switch and it could go to one person. If you're all powerful, then the most moral thing to do is just to teleport the people out of the way, or to teleport the train out of the way, or to stop the train. So that's the moral thing to do, is to save all lives. Now you apply the pragmatic limitations. We're not all powerful, so we obviously can't do that. Uh-huh. What can we do? Well, we can flip the switch. That's the thing we're physically capable of doing. It's going to kill one person but save five. And so there's less involuntary imposition of will if we pull the switch than if we don't pull the switch. And so it is a justified immoral action, even though you are still, one will is being restricted involuntarily. That's less than five. So it's the best you can do given your limitation. So it's a justified immoral action. And then the action you should take is to save the one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's
more of then that in that situation the principle of utilitarianism is applied, or is that it supersedes all others, I guess. So because you have like a choice to save the five, is that the case then?
Utilitarianism applies when you are limited. So if you don't have all power, then you can't just do the most moral thing. Well, then you have a limitation. You can only do one thing, which is the least immoral thing. So in that case, utilitarianism does apply, because you can only do a certain amount of things. There's going to be a bad outcome no matter what. So you have to pick the least bad outcome. That's not the moral thing. It's just the justified immoral thing. So the moral thing is to be all powerful and save all lives, essentially. That would be the moral action. But when you can't do that, then you have to use the utilitarianism to decide what has the least harm and what can you do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in that case, again, if I understood that correctly, then choosing to save one, or to sacrifice to save the one, and or just ignore the five, or choosing to save the five and sacrifice the one are both immoral actions, but due to the utilitarian principle, you are in a way obliged to choose to save the five due to the utilitarian principles. So it's a more of like several models manifesting each other, not manifesting, I guess, working together to arrive at the least immoral action.
No, it's the same model in all the cases. Like, there is one moral action, which is the one that there is no involuntary imposition of will. But if you can't do that, well, then you do the closest thing you can to that, which is the least involuntary imposition of will. It's
okay.
Not multiple models.
So I guess I'm detecting sort of a hierarchy of actions here. I guess that the highest would be that there would be you would be all powerful to do all that's good, and that everybody is has voluntary consent for all your actions. And then the second, lower than that is the loss of their voluntary will, or it's either that you're in your limited power, you can only produce the outcome within your limitations. And then it goes down with losing all of that. Is that correct?
Sure. That's the same with every moral model. Some actions are more immoral than others. Like, it's more immoral to kill someone than it is to steal candy from a baby. And it's more moral to save someone, to give someone your heart, than it is to just help someone carry the groceries. There's always more immoral actions and more moral actions. All moral systems have that.
Okay. Well, I want to look at which action is more, which value is more moral than the other. Okay, so for example, if I were to let's say that is injuring another person moral or immoral? Would it have to
immoral?
Okay, but would it have to constitute all the variables in play? For example, if I were somewhat interested in BDSM, for example, and someone injuring me would be within my voluntary consent, would that be a moral thing?
Well, no, if you consent to it, then it's not immoral. So if someone asks you to do it, to harm them or to kill them, then it would be moral to do so.
Okay. So in that case, then, not all cases of being injured or being or extending or giving harm to other people in terms of physical is immoral, right?
Like I said at the beginning, what's moral is voluntary. So if you someone does something, if asks you to do something and you help them do it, it's moral. And if someone says don't do that and you do it, it's immoral. So it's all based on consent. There are no specific actions that are themselves inherently immoral, except those that are by definition things that don't involve consent, like rape, which is by definition non-consensual. So it can't be moral. So it's not the actions don't matter. It's only the consent that matters. And any action could be moral or immoral if it has consent or doesn't have consent.
Okay. Then I have like two questions that pop into my mind. One is that what sort of consent is qualified to constitute something let it be moral or immoral? For example, if it were to be that, let's say a child whose consent is uninformed, and...
you got to stop right there. Kids don't have consent. That's why, like, we have consent laws for sex and alcohol and voting rights. If you're under a certain age, you don't have the ability to consent because you don't have the biological ability to do so yet. So those examples of kids don't apply to my model because they wouldn't be in the best of all possible worlds. Anyone in the best of all possible worlds would have the ability to consent. So children would not in that case.
Okay. Well, so for example, if a child were not able to have voluntary consent, then how would you know if what you did to a child is moral or immoral? Would it come from your own decision making, I guess?
No, it's the same system. So you'd say, if we were in the best of all possible worlds, that person would be an adult, and what should I do if that person was an adult? I should do whatever they consent to doing. And then you have to say, well, since it's a child, it doesn't realize that there's going to be natural consequences. Like, for example, if the child wants to eat ice cream, like 10 pounds of ice cream or whatever, and the child doesn't realize that if they eat 10 pounds of ice cream, that nature is going to have a huge imposition on their will, whether they intend it or not. They're even going to get diabetes or cold headaches or whatever. And so we can make a decision and say, the least immoral action is to not let them have ice cream because it will impose less on their will than if we let them have the ice cream. And so in that case, we can make the decision for the child to try and predict what will have the best outcome since they are unable to consent.
Okay. Okay. So now my second question is that, who is able to qualify as some sort of an individual agent who is accountable for, or not? Well, I don't know if accountability applies, but within the realm of where objective morality can be applied, does it apply to animals or only humans?
Yes, all conscious things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so in that case, that what would constitute what is the minimum or the threshold with which you would say something is conscious and unconscious?
If it has quality experience, it's conscious, and if it doesn't have quality experience, it's not conscious.
Okay. Well, when you say quality, though, qualia. Qualia. Okay. Would it be that, let's say, would bacteria have this qualia of consciousness?
No, probably not. As far as we know, only brains have it.
So in this case, then specific to all beings who have brains. That's it.
As far as we know, like there could be more, we just don't know yet.
Okay, but in this case, though, there are several models where for example, in the theory of how consciousness emerged, it's sort of a panpsychistic view, which is that the whole universe is sort of conscious But for example, non-living things are more of are conscious to a very small degree. So in that model, I guess then everything would be subjected to this objective morality that you propose.
Yeah, if everything had consciousness, but as far as we know, that's not the case.
As far as we know, okay. So in this case, then, for example, how would you know for certain what the hierarchy or the standard is? That is it simply a product of you rationalizing whether or not your moral action or your action is moral in comparison to the objective morality that you proposed?
No, we look at moral intuition and moral progress. Those are the things that we see as morality and we're trying to explain. Whatever morality is, it's the thing that's causing moral intuition and moral progress. And so we create theories of what is causing these things, and then we make predictions based off those theories. And if we get the predictions right, that would be evidence that our theory is correct, and that would be why we would believe it's objective. If I believe morality is objective and I can use that model to make Tesla predictions, and those Tesla predictions get confirmed to be correct, that's good evidence of my model being objective.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of testable predictions, though, how would you test something that is a conscious experience? For example, when we talk about how my subjective experience can be tested, I guess that in terms of epistemology, I would be the only one to know whether or not what my conscious experience is. I don't see a way we could in a scientific way we could test whether or not what I'm experiencing is like from another party perspective. It's only
We can definitely do that. We've already done that. Like, we have fMRIs of, we look into an fMRI and we know what people are going to do before they do it. That's a pretty common thing now. But I could also just make a prediction like, tomorrow you will see a red chicken or something. And then if tomorrow you see a red chicken, you can just tell me like, yes, I did see a red chicken, or no, I did not see a red chicken. That would also be a way to verify it. So I can make predictions about what you will experience, and then you can just confirm it if you do or don't. That's another way to do it. There's lots of different ways to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess then that, for example, in terms of, let's say, choosing between an action that is moral and another action that is also moral, how would you be able to use this model in that sense? Like, for example, if I were to have like $10 to donate to charity, how would I know if I would donate to victims of rape or orphans?
Same way, you just assess which one has the greatest assistance of will, and you give it to that group, whichever one it may be. And if you can't tell, you just make your best guess.
Okay, then what it seems that we are simply limited by our knowledge on how to arrive at moral actions in your paradigm, I guess. Because it is, because, for example, if it's only limited by my epistemology of how I know something is moral or immoral because of this paradigm, and I wouldn't be able to know all the variables taking place. For example, if I were to donate my $10 to someone who is victim of rape,
So it's pretty simple. So if you were in the best of all possible worlds and you were all powerful, you would know exactly what would happen if you gave the $10 to one organization or the other, until you know exactly which ones would have the most positive impact in one person's life as opposed to the other. We don't have that knowledge. We're not all powerful. So you just have to make the best guess we can with the limited knowledge we have, which is the same with, again, every worldview, every moral system has that same problem. Like, of course, we don't have all knowledge. We can't know which actions will do the best and which actions won't. That's not an issue at all with my model.
Okay. So I in a way, it's that all the variables that constitute or are included in this moral paradigm of yours is that it's only what's to my knowledge, I guess. Like, for example, to my knowledge, it is more helpful to donate my $10 to orphans rather than the other. So in that case, then it would lead me to choose that. Donating it to this cause would be the more moral action.
Every moral system is limited by your knowledge. That's true of everything. Every scientific model, every model of everything is limited by your knowledge.
Okay. So in that sense, then, for example, if I were someone who didn't know, to my knowledge, she was, for example, in a case of rape, for example, right? And it's just a thought experiment. If I were to my knowledge, she was giving consent, right? Would that be moral then?
No, it would still be immoral because it wouldn't be with her consent. You just wouldn't know it. You would be committing an immoral action. You'd just be ignorant of it.
But it's sort of contradictory though, right? Because, for example,
No. Well, so again, your knowledge doesn't matter. What you know means nothing. It's immoral if it's an involuntary imposition on their will. It's immoral whether you know it or not. Your knowledge is irrelevant.
Okay, then. But for example, earlier you said that it's every moral action is limited by someone's knowledge of a case.
No, never. Never is the case that a moral action is limited by people's knowledge. Their pragmatic action is limited by their knowledge. So you can say the moral action would be to save all the lives in the trolley problem. The pragmatic action is to save the five and not the one. That's not the moral action. That's the least immoral action. That's the pragmatic action. So the pragmatic action is limited by your knowledge. The moral action is the absolute best action you could do if you had all knowledge and all power.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So in this sense, then, my pragmatism is that I can only do what is within my power. So,
right, but that's what pragmatic means.
Yeah. But the question is, though, is I have the ability to choose to donate $10 to kids, and I have to orphans, and I have the ability to donate to the other cause. But that would be pragmatic for me. But pragmatism doesn't tell me who I should donate it to.
No. The pragmatism means you use the limitations of your knowledge to make your best guess. That's what pragmatism is. So which one you pick is just you use your best guess, and that's it. That's a pragmatic thing. It's not the moral thing. That's the least immoral thing, or the most moral given your limitations. But the absolute moral thing would be if you had all knowledge, you could know exactly which one to do it, and you don't. So you just make your pragmatic best guess, which the same is true of literally every system of everything.
Okay. So I guess then in a way, for example, when me choosing to donate to the orphans, that my pragmatic action is only limited I'm obliged to do it because of my limited knowledge, right?
No idea what you mean. What?
Do
the one you think is the most moral.
Okay. Yeah, but your knowledge of which one is the most moral is limited by your knowledge. That's what I'm talking about.
Sure, your knowledge is your knowledge. So if you don't have all knowledge, you would just have to make your best guess.
Okay. So we're talking about the best guess then, right? So in the case of me, for example, my best guess is that having sex with this woman is that she had voluntary consent while I was doing it, then in that case, then my action would be moral because it was my best guess.
No. Again, the action is moral or immoral independent of anything you think, ever. Your thinking makes no difference on it at all. So, and it's only moral if you're doing something someone wants you to do. And so it would be the least immoral action if you did something that someone wanted you to do, but it hurt someone else. If you're raping someone and you don't realize it, it's still immoral. It's never going to be moral, no matter whether you realize it or not. You just think it's moral and you're wrong. That's it. It changes nothing about the model at all.
Okay. So what I've seen here is that, for example, in one case, an action was more moral than the other because it was more pragmatic. And
Nope. It's more moral than the other if it does the greater thing. So giving the $10 to the one of the two victims, one of them is going to have more of an effect than the other, and that's the objective of the more moral case. You don't know which one is the case, so you just pick one. And that's it. It's not more moral or less moral for you to pick one. You're just picking one based off of your best guess. It doesn't change the morality at all, ever.
But, okay. Well, I can't seem to get a grasp of it, though, because it's sort of... Well, I'm sorry. I apologize if I can't understand it. It sort of adapts to a situation, but so it seems that it's not objective, but I can't seem to...
No, that's obviously false. I mean, the fact that it can measure all situations makes it objective. The fact that your pragmatic limitations mean you can't do the objective thing doesn't have any difference to the objectivity. The fact that you can't run at the speed of light doesn't mean that there isn't a speed of light. Like, you can only run at like maybe 15 miles an hour if you're a really fast human because of your limitations. Your limitations don't affect the objectivity of the speed of light. So there's an objective standard, which is the objective morality. Your limitations have no impact on it whatsoever. You can just do the best you can with your limitations. That adapts to your limitations, obviously, because your speed is measured compared to the speed of light, but it doesn't change the objectivity at all. Like, you're confusing your limitations with the objective standard. Those are two different things.
Okay. Then I guess I guess, for example, my understanding is that there is an objective morality or law outside of my own knowledge, and that whatever my knowledge is does not affect this law. And then my actions, which are limited by my own knowledge of what this objective moral action is not, I guess, can only be moral if it fits this standard. So, for example, it's my best guess that in comparison to what I think this objective moral standard says, that that donating to a child, to an orphan, is better than donating to this other one. But how would I know that my action is moral? Because when comparing it to this objective standard, this objective standard might say the opposite of what I believe. So I would never really know what I think the objective standard is correct, right?
All things, you could always be wrong. Like, that's your knowledge doesn't change objective things. Things are true or false independent of your opinion or your thoughts or your limited knowledge. So you try to get your knowledge to conform to reality, and you do the best you can with your limited knowledge, and that's just true of all knowledge. You say, I have a hypothesis. If my hypothesis is true, I can make testable predictions. If they confirm, that's good evidence. It's true independent of your mind, and you can have a reason to believe it. Can you be certain? No, you don't need to be certain, but that's just the best you can do, and that's fine. Like, you're just bringing up absolute certainty. You don't need absolute certainty. You don't have absolute certainty. Even if you believe in a God, you don't have absolute certainty. You could be wrong about what the God says and for the exact same thing. So literally every single ideology has the exact same problem. You can never be absolutely certain. It doesn't matter. You do the best you can with your limited knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So, okay then, I guess if I could repeat that, there's this objective morality standard, and I can only do what's best to my knowledge. So in that case, then I would guess that this objective morality or moral standard is actually sort of irrelevant, because we're always limited by our knowledge, and we'll never know what is the in the whole grand scheme of things, whether which one is more moral or not, right? In the gra we have no
No,
knowledge.
again, the same thing applies to a God. So if there's a God, you can never know for certain there's a God. Does it make it irrelevant? No, obviously not. So no.
Well, I don't know if why you just started talking about God, but
Because it's the exact same thing. Like the objectivity of God, if you never know it, you'll never be able to know God exists for certain. You just go based off of evidence. But does that mean God is irrelevant? No, obviously not. The same thing applies to morality. If you can't know it, it doesn't matter. It's still relevant. You do the best you can with your limited knowledge, just like you do with a God or any belief or any ideology or any system of knowledge at all. Like this, your questions don't make any sense. You're just saying, well, you don't have absolute certainty, therefore it's irrelevant. Like, obviously, that doesn't work for anything. I don't have absolute certainty. The sun won't rise tomorrow, but I'm still reasonably concerned to believe it. I don't, religious people don't have absolute certainty for God. They can still believe it because it's still important. You don't need absolute certainty. Absolute certainty doesn't mean anything.
But I'm really surprised why in a way why you're comparing this to God, but okay. Then we're talking about then the applicability of absolute certainty, because if essentially whatever I think my knowledge of what of an action is if it's moral or immoral, then because of my limitedness, I would believe it's irrelevant. Because okay, I might think this is right, I might think this is wrong, but the essentially, I will never know because I'm absolutely uncertain of it, right?
Okay, so could you be wrong about what God believes? You believe that God says to not kill people or whatever. You could be wrong about what God believes, and you'll never know, therefore it's irrelevant. God is irrelevant.
Well, I'm not talking about God here. I'm just talking about
No,
your.
your argument is bad. It doesn't work for God or my morality. It fails for both. So saying, if he's saying that you'll never know, therefore it's irrelevant. Well, then since you'll never know if you're right about God, then God is irrelevant by your definition.
Well, I don't. I don't care about that. But I just want to talk about your objective moral standard, right? So in this
Well,
case.
no, I'm proving why your argument doesn't work, why it makes no sense. Saying whether or not you will or not know something or not doesn't matter to its truth. God exists, and whatever God says is moral is going to be moral whether you know it or not. And you're going to try to do the best you can, even though you don't know, and you will never have absolute certainty. You're going to try to do what you think is moral, and you're probably going to get some things wrong. But that doesn't mean God's morality is irrelevant just because you don't know it. The problem here is that you're not applying your own logic to your own worldview, so you don't see why it doesn't work.
Well, to me, for example, if I understood correctly, for example, you're right. It might be not totally irrelevant because this objective morality will it does encompass all reality, right? But in terms of accountability, for example, to me, for example, if you because you started talking about God, divine command theory would say that. Would be relevant to me because I know that I will be held accountable for my action, right? I think that's essentially why something, a divine command, is relevant, right? Because God will hold me accountable for my actions, whether it's
What does
moral
that have to
or.
do with morality?
Yeah,
So,
so.
like, if Hitler killed somebody, but he wasn't punished afterward, it's still immoral to kill somebody. Like, whether or not you're punished or judged after the fact is irrelevant to the morality. Things are good or bad in and of themselves. The judgment afterward is irrelevant to morality. It doesn't affect the morality at all.
Okay, then in that but in that sense then, for example, again, I never know what if my action is moral or immoral in the grand scheme of things. And so then how would been I to me that whatever that objective morality says that my moral or immoral action is, that I will never know. Because and at the end it would just be left to me deciding for myself.
No, that's wrong again. No, again, you can know. It's just the same way you know with anything in science. You make tactile predictions. If you're right, then you know. You now know. If you get them right, you know. You're done. Will you know with absolute certainty? No, you don't need to know with absolute certainty. Like, we could be in the Matrix. Does that prove you wrong? No, it's still fine to know. You do not need absolute certainty. You can know with tactile predictions. None of that is relevant.
Okay, cool. To be honest, I guess that you've satisfied all my questions, and I apologize if I started being very argumentative. I just want to understand it and answer all the questions in my head. Okay, can we start talking about God then? Because it's something that I think everyone wants to talk about.
Okay.
Okay. Then I guess that because you say you're an atheist, would you define it as an absence of belief in a classic theistic God?
Yeah, I don't believe in any God. I think there's no reason to believe or no evidence to indicate that any God exists. I think that certain gods are self-contradictory, so they prove themselves to not exist, like the Christian gods and the Abrahamic gods. So I think we can definitely say they don't exist. But there's no evidence for any God, so it's reasonable to conclude there are none.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess then that it's similar to not having an absolute certainty in your objective morality, because for example you would never really know for certain whether or not there's a God exists. So in that sense it would have to be sort of an agnostic decision.
So again, no, you can know things without absolute certainty, so you don't need absolute certainty to know things. Just it's called fallibilism. It's the consensus among all philosophers and all scientists. You do not need absolute certainty to know things. So anytime you bring up absolute certainty, that is not knowledge. That's something different. You can know things without absolute certainty. So I can know there's no gods without knowing with absolute certainty there's no gods. You don't need that.
Okay. Then but how do you arrive at this position or this stance where you have no reason to conclude that there is no God? But where do you start in this thought process?
There is no evidence. So there's no reason to believe in a God. Therefore, it's reasonable to conclude there are none.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are your, what constitutes as evidence and not evidence though? That there is a God.
Testable predictions. So if you said, I believe there is a God, therefore we're going to do this experiment, like I'll pray to him and a gold brick will appear in front of me, and then you pray and a gold brick appears in front of you, that would be evidence. So just any testable predictions. It doesn't have to be a gold brick. It could be anything you want it to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then in a way, it's sort of using the scientific method in order to test whether God exists or not, right?
Sure. You can use the scientific method for anything supernatural, anything magical, mythical. All those things work for the scientific method.
Okay. And what if the nature of something is purely, is not able to be tested by material evidence? And so, or you can never really arrive at something due to empirical evidence. But would you say then
you would need to provide a different way?
Yeah, you would provide.
You need to provide a different method to differentiate imagination from reality.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then now that we're talking about that, I guess then the transcendental arguments for God would apply here, because a lot of theists would agree with you that you can never arrive at God from purely empirical epistemological approaches.
Sure, but the transcendental arguments don't do anything. So in order for something to qualify as evidence, the reason I use novel testable predictions is that you need some way to differentiate imagination from reality. You have, there are infinitely many imaginary things you can think of, and any of them could be the truth. But if you don't have any evidence to indicate that, then they're just as imaginary, just like the infinitely many other ones that are also imaginary. So you need some way to differentiate imagination from reality to count as evidence. I use novel testable predictions. If you can provide a different way, that's fine. The transcendental arguments do not do that. The transcendental arguments are just saying there are things in your imagination. That's full stop. So they don't say anything about reality. They just say, oh, there's math. That's in your imagination. Oh, there's logic. That's in your imagination. Oh, there's beauty and abstract objects and relations. All those are all in your imagination. So none of that's actually evidence that those things in your imagination exist in reality. They're just assertions. So none of that is actually evidence because none of it actually qualifies as a way to differentiate imagination from reality. It's just all imaginary stuff.
Mm-hmm. So, but in that sense, then, for example, when you're talking about the transcendental arguments and so I guess then that you're saying that just because an argument is valid doesn't mean that it corresponds to reality in a simple sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but when we talk about, for example, having a coherent worldview here, and you have like you're trying to arrive at a coherent answer to why you're existing, to how we justify existence itself or being itself. From a atheistic worldview, how would you arrive at this? You know, answering all the questions from all the classical skeptics or.
Well, there's lots and lots of coherent worldviews. You don't have to answer all the problems from the skeptics that have a coherent worldview. That's not at all what coherent worldview means. So naturalism is a coherent worldview. Materialism is a coherent worldview. Physicalism, coherent worldview. There's lots of coherent worldviews. For it to be coherent, it just means it's not self-contradictory. That's all it means. So anything could just, pretty much anything is a coherent worldview. There's a magical pineapple in the sky is a coherent worldview. Like, coherent isn't really a hard standard to meet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so can you talk about your own worldview? Because I guess then you're a physicalist.
Yeah, I'm a materialist, naturalist. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then when we talk about, for example, a necessary existence, how would you justify existence?
Same way you would. I'd say there's a necessary existence. It's just a nature.
Okay, that things just exist in that sense. They don't come from something or aren't caused by anything. They could actually just exist, right?
Yeah, just like you think God does. There's uncreated, eternal, necessary thing. It's just nature, reality, no God.
Mm-hmm. So then, for example, can we talk about the, for example, the Kalam cosmological argument, right?
Sure.
Okay, so for example, when you have a finite universe, it's sort of infinite, but in the sense that did it have a beginning or an end? I've happened to believe that it does have a beginning. And
in physics, it's our universe had a beginning, not all universes had a beginning. So physics doesn't say the universe had a beginning, as in all universes are all natural things. It only says that our universe had a beginning. So in physics, nothing in physics says that nature had a beginning. It's just the specific universe we live in had a beginning.
Mm-hmm. So in this worldview, then you would believe that there is no such thing as a beginning. Only that it's both infinite, if eternal, in from the past to the future.
Yeah, there was some natural thing before the universe.
And another natural thing, so it's all infinite regress.
No, one of them is a necessary thing. There's no infinite regress.
So, but then because, you know, in terms of like a causal understanding of everything, you know, because you say that there's something that exists before the universe, then how would you know that how that thing existed in the first place? Then you would have to argue that it existed before another thing. So is that how you justify it?
What? We have the universe, and we know it had a beginning because of general special relativity, the Big Bang. And then we have other physics that shows before that there was other things, and those other things have certain properties. And that's how we get to what's before the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So in that sense, then you know, in terms of like, for when you say that the universe had a beginning and it had a cause, then... My question is that it does arrive at an infinite regress, though, because then...
Well, so like an infinite regress would say that everything has a cause. That's not what physics says. Physics says that our universe has a cause, and it could be caused by the multiverse, and the multiverse may not have a cause, and it may just be this stopping point, and it's the necessary thing. Or it could be emergent space-time is the cause, and that could be the stopping point, and there's nothing before that. Or it could be that there was the multiverse, and the multiverse was created by emergent space-time, and then that's the stopping point. Like, you could, there's lots of different ways to do it. One of them is the stopping point. It's not truly that difficult.
Well, so you're saying that the sort of the multiverse is eternal?
It could be, or emergent space-time could be, or the amplituhedron could be. There's lots of things that could be.
Okay. Then, you know, I don't know if there is a multiverse, or are you arguing for that right now?
No, I'm just saying any of them could be. There's lots of different natural things that could be before the universe. Any of them could be necessary. Any of them could be created by some other thing before that. We don't know what the necessary thing is. It's just there's lots of different possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then, Tom, I just want to say that thank you so much for being a guest in my podcast. It's I guess that we're almost an hour now, and I would like you to say your last words, because our at a final statement, I guess, if you want, like.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here. Talk to you guys later.
Okay. Bye, man.
See ya.
So that's the end of it. Thanks for tuning in, guys. This is your host, Elmo Adore Jr. And thank you for listening in. And please subscribe. Please follow us on Facebook. Please follow this. Please. Thanks.
It takes a lot of ingredients to fix or build a car. Like cooking, but without the frozen dinner easy way out. eBay Motors has 122 million parts. It's always the right fitment, so you can follow any recipe to a T. Whether it's a vintage Italian coupe that's classic like grandma's meatballs, or a German luxury car that's as complicated as Oma's rouladen, to cook up something great in the garage, use the eBay Motors app or visit ebaymotors.com. Let's ride.
Holidays are here, and so is fashionable fitness. Gift yourself a Samsung Galaxy Z Flip 3 5G, a phone that folds in half to literally stand on its own. Pair it with the Galaxy Watch 4 for ultimate wellness and wow factor. Check health stats, flex personal records. Over 90 activities can be tracked, like biking, swimming, golfing, and more. Invest in yourself with tech made to crush goals. Holidays open up with Galaxy. Shop it all at Samsung.com. 5G connection and availability may vary. Check with carrier. Products sold separately.